Hello, I'm Chris Coe. This is an Eye for the Light podcast, Newton & Co. with fellow photographer David Newton.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us again. And welcome today to our guest, Jordan Banks. I'm going to let Chris do the introduction and then we will crack on and get some questions fired at him.
Fantastic. Okay, so Jordan is a travel, landscape and adventure photographer. And he's embarking on a very interesting new project, which we're going to get him to tell us about after he's given us a little bit of background to his photography. So, Jordan, welcome.
Thanks very much for having me, guys. Appreciate it. Good to be here.
Okay, let's kick off with the easy questions. How and when did you get into photography? Has it been a lifelong passion?
I did it at college. I studied really just out of not wanting to know anything else to do. I didn't really have a plan of what I wanted to be. And it seemed like quite an interesting course. And then it sort of fell by the wayside after A-levels. And I actually decided I wanted to get into sort of cameraman filming. I sort of war journalism, conflict journalism, that sort of thing. And it just turned out that trying to get down that road wasn't for me. And I started to be led back towards more to photography. And I had a love for travel always. Like, my parents traveled a lot. So I've always been roaming around. It just sort of, I just decided to go travel and see what I could make of it. And it was actually partly, I guess, you, Chris, and Peter Adams, one of your first winners in the Travel Photographer of the Year.
Our very first winner, actually.
Yeah. So it was seeing his work, I think I discovered, so that was that around 2003, maybe, something like that?
2003.
Yeah, so I just, and then that put me onto, oh, this is a real thing. I sort of just treated it as a hobby. I was young. I just enjoyed traveling. I didn't really think about it as a career or anything other than just taking the odd snap, and I didn't take it too seriously. You know, I wasn't out every sunrise, every sunset when I was traveling then. I just did a lot more sort of street and documentary photography. And yeah, seeing Peter and discovering that it was an actual business and a real side to travel photography, I just decided to try and embark and make a career out of that, basically. So that did happen when 2003, that'd be when I was sort of 18, 19, something like that, I think. So yeah, I guess by now it has become a lifelong passion, really. I mean, I'm just about to turn 40, so.
You mentioned Peter Adams. Are there any other photographers that have inspired you?
I think the ones that really, there's obviously hundreds that have inspired me. I think the two that really took on around that same time was David Notton.
Yeah.
Who they just seem to be the people that, whether I just discovered them, they had the top, you know, they've had some fantastic work, as I'm sure you're aware. And it just made me realize there was more to this and I could push boundaries and, you know, the use of filters and different techniques and this sort of thing. I realized a whole nother depth and side to photography that I'd never really thought of. So they were my two probably biggest inspirations. Mm. And then obviously into getting into a path of photography as a career anyway. Then more obviously people like Ansel Adams had a huge impact on that, and just learning the skills and the basics behind photography to sort of really try and hone and understand light. And then more modern day, there's people like Richard Taylor, who's become quite a good friend of mine. Marco Botticelli, who is an Italian photographer. I'm a big fan of his work. But yeah, there's too many to mention, really. There's literally hundreds that I look at. And especially now in this day of Instagram and Twitter and social media, you're inundated with amazing photographers. So, but yeah, David Notton and Peter Adams are probably the two that stand out to sort of having made, I feel like, thankful to, even though I've never met Peter. And David, I've only met a few times, and I did let him know that he was an inspiration to me, but I think he wasn't quite ready for it. He was quite humble about it.
I know David. I can imagine him being very slightly set aback by that, a little bit like, oh, I wasn't quite ready for expecting that.
He definitely wasn't. I think I might have been a bit emotional as well, because it was kind of like meeting a hero. And it was like, this is really weird. Like, I was like a little schoolboy or something, meeting, you know, Ronaldo or whatever. But yeah, he was definitely a little bit taken aback. He probably doesn't remember it, to be honest.
So I want to pick up actually on people that inspire you. You said early on there were people, and you then led into what my next question was going to be, was, you know, do you still go around looking for that kind of inspiration? I guess it leads into how much time do you spend looking at other people's work, looking at what they do to find inspiration now?
It sounds bad. I say all the time I'm looking at it. Just with my career, I'm always, you know, I'm on it. I'm not on Instagram a lot, but when the kids are in bed and I'll you know, just got a few hours, rather than watch telly, I scroll through Instagram and just look for locations to inspire me and stories. And even if they're not photography related, they might be travel or just world issues that I sort of see if I could take my photography and make a story around that, or how I could adapt to that sort of thing. So yeah, it's probably 24/7 really. And I'm constantly getting emails and pinged by people and, you know, on social media who are all talented that you've never heard of. And some of them haven't got massive followings at all, but they've still got some incredible work out there, you know? So yeah, all the time I'd say I'm just, yeah, looking around for people and keeping up. But it's definitely changed how I look for what inspires me now. I've definitely taken it more to being inspired from a commercial point of view, I think, rather than just trying to create art, because the realization of needing to make money and having to survive and make it a career became, as right or wrongly so, I sort of always dream of the day of one day I might just be able to go back and just take photos for me, but they'd be very different to what I'd be taking now. So my inspiration's sort of taken in a different way, which is not a bad thing. It's just a different manner of working, I think, and a different style of what I'm trying to achieve in my goals in photography and that sort of thing.
I think that's very interesting, and actually goes into talking about maybe personal projects. So you obviously, you shoot commercially, you shoot to make money, and your style has evolved in that direction. But do you still shoot personal projects? Do you go out and shoot just for you now and again?
Yeah, I'd say I do, because I'll do at least a trip or two a year where I will just go on and shoot somewhere, either recceing a location or just trying to shoot a story that I might pitch to editors later. So I'm all, yeah, I say that not the last couple of years I haven't, but other than that, I'd normally do sort of two trips a year to do for myself. But if I, like, I've got a project that I've never actually started, and I've sort of, it's been introduced by a fellow called Jeremy Crudson, who's a sort of fine art photographer. I'm not sure if you'd have heard of him, but he's got these really sort of still life, but with the human element in them, and they're sort of dully lit, and really they're very hard to describe really, but I've always had an attraction to sort of things like the corner shops and little like shops that are in housing estates and in England. I've always wanted to do a project just on sort of night scenes and dust scenes, and trying to make these places that make Britain what it is for me, like those iconic little things like the Happy Shopper, and try and make them look in a pretty sort of way but still sort of keep that ruggedness. But there's no real commercial value to that for me. No one would care about my work. It wouldn't get me anything. So that is a project I want to work on and want to start on. But I'd probably say, unfortunately though, really, I don't do enough for myself. I spend a lot more time shooting now for a commercial purpose, or what's gonna, you know, what editors and picture buyers, and sticking the trends sometimes that, you know, like for example, putting people in the landscape has become a much bigger part of my work. Before, when I started out, I would shoot landscapes and I'd be a more traditionalist landscape photographer when I was shooting landscapes and just keep it about the landscape, whereas now it's changed much. More editors want to see people in the landscape, that sort of thing. So I've started to try and include people and include myself or get passers-by. So yeah, my style's definitely changed and adapted to what needs to be done.
Sticking with the commercial theme, travel photography is difficult to earn a living. How do you go about giving yourself an edge over other photographers?
That's a very good question. I'm not really sure I have an edge, to be honest. I think I constantly hustle. Like, just, I'll be sending emails out all the time. I'll be contacting people. I'll be coming up with ideas. I'll be trying to put things out there to people. And I found that if I just keep doing that, a lot of stuff obviously is a disappointment, or there's no reaction, or you're just ghosted or whatever it might be. But I found if you keep plugging away with things and trying to attract the right clients and the right people, then it seems to just work out for me, to be honest. I've got no real, I guess, a bit of hard work, hopefully, but I don't always feel like I'm the hardest worker, so I'm not totally sure that's true, but stubbornness, persistence maybe. And I think I realized for a bit, excuse me, that I think some people in photography take it as more of a lifestyle job, so they don't always put as much into it as they could do or should do to really succeed in it. So it felt like I was sort of succeeding without actually being the very best, as it were.
Following on from making a living, obviously the last, I guess, 12 months have seen the rise of NFTs, or for those that don't know what they are, non-fungible tokens, as a potential income stream. And I see you've dipped your toes in it. How have you found it? And you know, what was the process like? Why did you go down that route?
I went down it just primarily to just experiment and see what it was about. And, you know, I felt like always I missed out on the Bitcoin thing and these sort of trends, Instagram, getting on Instagram when it was at the very beginning. And I've been much more business savvy since then. So it seemed like an obvious thing to do. I started for a while. It was really not understood or by me. I was like, I can't, why would anyone want this? I don't understand. And then when it was explained to me in the process of it's the same as buying, you know, an original piece of Ansel Adams, you don't actually own that piece as such, but you get to hang, well, you do it, you own that one piece rather than actually owning the whole rights to the image and the copyright. It made much more sense to me. And then I just saw a value in it because, and I started to think about other things. And I dabble slightly in the stock market more for just fun and just to try to find it, you know, not with big money or anything. But one of the companies I invested in was a company that does glass that will basically have all your screens on it. So for buildings, offices, they could advertise on the outside or on the inside, it'd become your monitor. So for, you know, office buildings and things. And it made me think that the two things were combined in a way the world's going to go that way, that you're going to have adverts. You're going to come to a point where people, all photography is pretty much digital now, really. You know, a lot of people creating art, the youngsters are doing it on tablets and Photoshop and Illustrator rather than actually going out with oils and canvas and painting, as it were. So it just seemed like people might actually, and I saw this, the idea of putting their frames up as monitors. So you just have your digital images displayed as monitors and put them, actually frame the monitor, put a mount around it, even you've got a digital photograph or a digital video. And it just seemed like the future to me, that I could see that being the way the world goes. When the 18-year-olds are 40, that's how we'll all be living. And why not, you know, it seemed like there's a space to grow in it and get your foot in a market while it was still young and potentially grow. But that being said, the way you have to sort of market yourself is very hard for me, because they're buying into the artist rather than the work, or sometimes, or primarily. So you have to really publicize yourself. So that seems to be a marketplace. Like Twitter seems to be the go-to place now, the platform for NFT artists. And you've got to sort of really just self-promote, but trying to self-promote yourself for me is really hard, just being that vain and, you know, overconfident. And do people want to just see you going, hey, check how good my work is. Do you want to pay, you know, 2 Ethereum for it? Or so I'm finding that tough to deal with, really, just having to self-promote. So I've just, you know, I haven't had much success or any success with it, but I do know a couple of photographers. Marco Botticelli, who I mentioned earlier, he did sell 2 of his pieces, but he did composites. So there were sort of 3 images combined into one. He sold 2 of them, I think, for, you know, quite good money. And I think there were 3 and 4 Ethereum each. So I think that's around $7,000 at the time a piece, something like that. So there's obviously money and belief in there. I think that at the moment it's very much a roundabout space where photographers and collectors are all one and the same, and there's not enough collectors, so it's going around a loop to maybe grow a market that's not really sustainable long term. You're not going to see these people buying at that prices, I don't think, but down the line I think you could find it becoming a way of, you know, stock photography licensing images, because you've got it on the blockchain. People can just go and see that, you know, that's it's an RM image there, and it's 100% it's an RM image. You know exactly where it's been, who it's been used by, what it's, you know, everything that's been done with it because of the blockchain. So yeah, it's an interesting topic, definitely, but I'm no master of it at all.
It is an interesting topic, actually, and you've just sparked some thoughts in my mind about the whole, like, tying it into rights management for images, which is something that's basically just disappeared. I started off as a picture editor in a picture library, goodness knows how long ago, and it was all rights managed, and then royalty free appeared and ripped the bottom out of the photographic market.
Maybe
blockchain, NFTs and the like is actually a way of taking back control of image ownership and image rights management. Very interesting.
I can't take credit for all of these myself. There's lots of groups out there. It's not me that just innovated this. So, you know, these ideas have been fed to me through different photographers and different groups and people. So just before anyone starts thinking I've invented the wheel again, but I definitely, or claiming to have invented the wheel, but I definitely, yeah, I think there's a market. It could be the future, and it seems silly not to be trying to be involved in it if it turns out to be the future, basically.
Sure.
I think I'm going to stay seeming silly. For me, that's like, I'll leave that one to you guys. My life's too short.
I think there was the fear of missing out as well. When I saw good, you know, people I know making that sort of money, you're like, well, I'd be daft not to see what it's all about. But yeah, like I said, I haven't had any success, but I think, again, they're buying into the artist, so you've got to sell it yourself, and I'm not, I prefer my work to sell itself rather than me.
Maybe you just need a marketeer, or we need marketeers to sell us for us.
Yeah, that's exactly what I need, exactly. I've got a friend of mine who's a really savvy businessman, he's always saying, like, Jordan, you should have a team behind you, and it's like, of course I should. He's like, you should just be taking photos all the time and have a marketing team, social media, and they do all that for you. And I was like, of course, but who's paying them to do that? You know, like, of course, I'd have all that if I was, you know, Rankin or, you know, one of these guys, then I'm sure it wouldn't be a problem. But I don't see that ever happen, to be honest.
If we were selling pictures every week as NFTs for 4 Ethereum, that wouldn't be a problem, would it?
Yeah, exactly. I'd have an assistant straight away, that's for sure.
Okay, so I see from your website that you make films as well as shooting stills. Do you think that's an important aspect of the photography business now, and especially in travel photography?
100%. I mean, it's more of a commercial value. I've found that it's probably at least a third of it's given me an extra third revenue on top of my business, if not doubled it. And they're not, I work with freelancers as well. So I've been quite lucky when I grew up, like I just happened to have a lot of friends who've become photographers, videographers. So sometimes if I've got the photography gig, I can add on the video if they want to do it already. It's two people, it's all together, it's in-house and becoming a production studio almost. So yeah, I'd definitely say it made sense for me to do it. And if, you know, I had the connections and why not? And when I film myself, you know, I've learned myself and I'm still improving a lot. But, you know, if you've got the framing and the sort of director of photography skills, which you know, a photographer should have or does have generally, then you're really onto something in terms of you've got the composition, which I find a lot of videographers are the things that they struggle with. They've got all these nice movements, but if you can start off with the great compositions, then generally your video is going to look pretty good, even if they're not too dynamic and lots of these fancy movements on cranes and gimbals, just a well-framed shot. I mean, it was actually the film Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon that made me sort of think about it, because I watched that and I was like, almost every, if you paused it at any point, every scene would have just, you could have cut out and put on your wall and it would look amazing. And it made me think, whoever the director of photography who did this, who framed this, and the team, that was in some incredible work to put that amount of detail into it. And that inspired me to maybe think that I could try and, you know, learn from that and take that adds to my skill set basically and my business.
Interesting. Now let's talk about this new venture of yours. You've got your new venture, Journey Magazine.
That's correct.
Where did the idea come from? How have you got it off the ground? What were you trying to achieve? You know, where's it going?
So I run a travel photography tours and workshop company with my business partner, Kav Dadfar. And probably we've done that for quite a few years. Obviously, it's been decimated by the last couple of years. It's been, you know, everything's, I mean, it started to pick up again. We've just been to Sky and we've got other work coming up. But before we even started that wild idea, which is our tour company, we knew each other through Four Corners. We both sell stuff through the same stock library at Four Corners. We'd known each other for a long time. And we got together and Kav put this idea of, he'd like to start a photography magazine, a travel photography magazine, travel photography, you know, writing, not just photography, but with good photography. We were photographers, so it sort of came about, but really for the photographers and writers, by photographers and writers. And this was well before the pandemic. And we were both like, yeah, that sounds, we'd love to do this, but how do we make this work? Or what's the plan other than, you know, where's the marketplace or anything like that? And we just decided to shelve it basically and just think, oh, we'll do that maybe as a vanity project when we get older and money maybe hopefully isn't an issue. We can just play, you know, do something that we really, really love. And that was, I can't remember when that was, but yeah, a good few years ago now. And then this summer I was in on assignment in Croatia and I heard the news about Lonely Planet magazine going under and Sunday Times Travel magazine or Traveler or magazine going under. And I obviously knew a lot of the writers, a lot of photographers that were affected by this, and that was, you know, their regular gigs gone. So, and I also just thought it'd be quite a good time to start a travel photography or travel magazine now, not photography, keep saying photography, but it's not, it's a travel magazine. And so I just said to Kav, what about this? And I'd sort of forgotten even that we'd had this back burner idea. And he was like, yeah, don't remember we talked about it. And I was like, oh yeah. So we sort of took the same idea of trying to make it a support project like we'd wanted to. And we just thought the time was right where people might actually want something like that, might be willing to support the magazine. And I mean, so we put it on Crowdfunder and it just absolutely blew up. I think we got sort of most of it funded within the first week, which went absolutely beyond. Like we were both ready. Like we loved the idea. We knew we had support from, you know, the writers. Everyone was really keen on it, but it wasn't enough to make it sustainable, obviously. And yeah, it just really, it's taken off from there, really. Everyone's just got behind it. And yeah, it's been an absolutely incredible project, to be honest, to be part of. I mean, it's been a lot of work and a lot of effort and a lot of changes and amends to the design and that sort of thing. But, and it's, I think as well, like we were wanting to help out and do something. We're both now in that situation where we weren't, you know, we're not quite in the point of being able to just fund anything ourselves as a vanity project, but we weren't quite in the need for money that we were 5, 6, 7 years ago when we first discussed this idea. So, and we had a bit of time as well. That was the other thing. When we first talked about it, it's like, this is a great idea, but I'm off to, you know, Iceland next week, you're off to Thailand and South Butte. And we were all over the place. Someone shooting a hope. And it's like, well, and then we had tours running. It was like, well, when do we make this magazine? Whereas now in the pandemic, obviously the other thing, we had time and money wasn't an issue, or whatever, it was going to be what it was going to be, basically, because we couldn't work anyway. So we had the time and resources to do it. And yeah, it's taken off, and yeah, there's going to be a second issue and hopefully a third, fourth, fifth, and so on.
So the crowdfunding was just to fund the first issue or to fund a series of issues?
Just the first issue. So when we started out, it was obviously a nice idea to maybe think of doing. I think we both had in our mind, it'd be lovely if this takes off and we end up with a travel magazine and we can support writers, photographers, editors, and really do things a bit different. But I don't think we were really ready. We thought, oh, we'd probably get this one out and it'll, you know, just about straight by. And we'd sort of agreed that even if we had to, we might, you know, push it over the line ourselves. If we got far enough, then me and Cav were like, well, once we've got this far, we'll support it ourselves if we can, just to get this one issue over the line. So the first crowdfunding, your answer to your question, was just for one issue. But then that has led so many other people to get involved, and obviously realizing how many people wanted to see it and the messages we've got and the support, like people from, like yourselves, that we're going to try and do a second issue and make again crowdfund it and just keep going like this and trying to support different writers. And we could realize we can support more writers, more photographers, more creatives. We want to hopefully look at maybe getting, you know, it's been discussed about putting like travel poems in there, actually supporting causes as well that give back. I know we've been in touch with people like Gandhi's, who give a lot back to the community from the, you know, from their clothing brands. So yeah, it's snowboarding a bit. It's quite hard to take in, to be honest. There's so much going on.
For anyone that's listening, because obviously there will probably be quite a few travel type photographers listening to this, how would people get involved?
The crowdfunder's finished now, unfortunately, but we've still got issues that we've taken extra issues as well so that we can sell them on afterwards, so during the print run. So if you go to journeymag.com, that's journeymag.com, you can support there. And we've worked on a pay structure, so it's an equal pay structure for every contributor after expenses of printing, shipping, that sort of thing. So there's no profit, so everyone's been sort of given their share, and then any after sales every quarter, 6 months, depending on how we see how the sales go, they'll be divvied up between the writers or writers and photographers, we'll just see if it suddenly snowballs and there's loads, it might be every month, but we'll see.
And if anyone wants to contribute, if people wanted to contribute stories, or are you open to people getting in touch for that?
100%. Yeah, if you've got any interesting stories, any interesting features, any ideas, we're open to supporting anyone and everyone. The one thing I'd say is we want to keep it interesting to the readers as well. So we're not really looking for just, hey, here's a story of through Thailand, or here's a story through, you know, Rajasthan. We want a sort of more specific topic that's tight knit, an editorial piece ideally, rather than just a broad rough guide through a 6-10 page pull out of a guide through a place, through a country, rather get in. And we've got lots of ideas to try and include this, like trying to include more local people and actually get their stories behind and take it in a different direction. I won't delve in too much, but yeah, we've got some, now we can really play with it and know we've got something that people are interested in and want to support and help, then yeah, we've got a lot of ideas to put forward and hopefully take it to another level.
A number of photography magazines have failed, and travel magazines for that part. And one of the reasons, in my opinion, they do is that the photography really lets them down. Are you taking a really strong stance with the photography, presumably as photographers you are?
Yeah, I mean, I act as the photo editor, and yeah, it's my biggest thing, my biggest gripe when I read travel magazines. Some of the writing is absolutely superb, there's no question about that, and it can be really let down by the photography being just not up to par. So yeah, it's a huge part of it. We're trying to work out how to get the best line to try and match with budgets and everything, to match up actually getting quality photography with quality writing, because obviously, you know, you've got to send two people on the same place, and obviously budgets are limited, so it's trying to find that right way to do it, basically. But yeah, we truly believe that that's, you know, hopefully when you all see the magazine, the real version, and you know, the photography stands out, like it's another level, like of what we've done, of what you see on normal travel magazines, not to put anyone else down, but it's such a high level, and we wanted to show it off as well, not just fill it. We wanted to have big images in pages and places that really showed off the quality of photography to try and get it home to you. So, you know, we've included quite a lot of photo essays, which, you know, really make you feel like you've been there or want to go there. And the words aren't too much. And then obviously we've got the 10, 11 stories that also accompanied by fantastic photographs and amazing words. So, yeah, it was a big thing as well. The choosing the cover was a real pain because... It just went on, and because it was so important to us of what we got it right and got the ethos of the magazine and the quality and that sort of thing of photography and showing what a high level it was. And we were super lucky that Philip Lee Harvey, who I know you know, he contacted us when he heard about it, and obviously top level photographer, and he sort of put his help advice, you know, and has provided us with a cover image and a story inside and a feature inside. So, you know, things like that have, you know, that was unexpected at the time. I didn't, you know, you sort of think, shall I contact someone like that? I'd never met him before, but you know, once you do, he's just a mate almost now. It's quite odd. So you sort of have, again, he was one of my quite inspirations, actually. I'm going back to that question, Philip Lee Harvey, obviously seeing the quality of his work and his commercial work and making the combination of really beautiful travel imagery and obviously making it marketable and making a successful career out of it.
Your podcast is going to be following his on Eye for the Light here. He's just done one for us as well.
I think I saw a Twitter or Instagram post from you or him that he'd done something. So yeah. I feel honoured. I wouldn't have thought that a few years ago.
Let's step away from Journey again. We're going to come back to your photography. Now, you've obviously been taking pictures a long time, you said at the top. If you could go back to the younger you, what would be the biggest bit of photographic advice you would give yourself?
In terms of being a better photographer or in terms of making a better business out of it?
Anything, whatever you think would be the most key advice that the younger you should have.
I think probably the work ethic I didn't have, really. So it's not really a photography related one. It was just not, I thought it would just come to me, and I didn't really realise how much of a slog it was. And I thought, oh, you just take some nice pictures and it'll fall at your feet. And that's definitely not the case. So I think learning to sort of sell yourself and market yourself and really drive and change my work ethic is a massive part of the business side. In photographically, I would say try and nail down what you really want to do and make a passion out of it. And that will show through in your work. So for example, I started out wanting to do and I still really would love to, I accept that it's never going to happen, be a war photographer or, you know, photo, really sort of, and something that I felt at the time could possibly change the world, as arrogant as that sounds, but you see these images that really could make a difference and brought to light issues that needed to be brought to light. And I wanted to try and do that, to use photography to make a difference. And I'm still intrigued by that human element of those little moments of how things, you know, life and that photojournalism. I accepted that I wasn't going to do that because, you know, I had a family and that sort of thing. And it was turning less and less safe than if it ever had been safe. It was getting more and more dangerous for photojournalists to be out there. You were getting less support and journalists weren't as safe as they used to be. then I started just trying to do any job, like portraits, weddings, commercial stuff, travel, a bit of everything, and not really focusing on one sole direction. And it, I feel it wasted a bit of my time, really, which I had used those 3 or 4, whatever years I did, where I didn't really have a direct goal. I would have been 3 or 4 years ahead in my career, which would have been a massive benefit to me. And once I started to actually focus on solely doing travel and what I wanted to do and getting the clients that I wanted, that would allow me to be creative and do what I do and wanted the product I was selling, rather than trying to make me something else and just sticking to my ethos and going down that, then that, in my career, has blossomed, I think, just knowing what I want to do and having a clear direction and valuing yourself as well. I think when I was younger, I was grateful just to be getting work. So you'd, I think I know I undercharged, whereas now I don't undercharge, and if anything, I may be overcharged potentially, but then I'd rather work, it works out better to me if you do it, if I'm doing a job that I don't feel I'm getting paid or valued on, then I don't think my heart's quite in it. So I want to be, I know I need to be paid correctly, then I do the job correctly, and I might end up working less, but it probably all works out the same because I'm making more money when I do work.
We'll try and make sure that your clients don't hear you say that you overcharge.
Well, not overcharge, but I mean, I mean more that I don't, sometimes I put a price, I still sort of think, am I worth that? Do you know what I mean? I still sort of, you know, when I get a Nat Geo cover or something, I still sort of think, God, I don't, the money's not an issue for me. It's not what I care about. It's having it. It's still the kudos of doing the job, or, you know, having it on there for me rather than the money. So it's hard to, I still find it hard to value myself, is what I meant by that, more than anything, really.
I think it's common among photographers, artists generally, is that imposter syndrome. Really, am I worth that much? Can I really charge this much money for what I do? I point a camera and push a button.
Yeah, and especially for me, it feels like, obviously was a day when it didn't come naturally, but now it's so natural to me that it's like, yeah, that imposter thing, it's like, this is pretty easy for me now, you know, like, so natural, I do it so often that it doesn't feel like work. And yeah, so that, yeah, definitely, I agree with you, say the imposter syndrome's definitely there. But I think that's creatives as well, isn't it? You're never really sure you're good.
Yeah, it is, you know, it's the creative mentality, isn't it? Everyone thinks they're not as good as they are.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's, and some are right.
The bane of a creative life. Oh, Chris, cutting to the end.
Yeah.
Actually, I've got another question for you. Actually, just on your shooting style, when you're shooting, do you spend much time pre-visualizing, or do you react more spontaneously? You know, you're on location. Do shots just appear to you? You said it comes so naturally now. Is it a pre-visualized shot, or is it spontaneous response, or a combination of the two?
A combination, definitely. So I'll always plan and do loads of research on everywhere. So one, make sure I don't just shoot the same stuff that everyone else is, even if it's accidentally. I want to try and be original and create something different. So I make sure I'm not copying, but also I want to know what's out there. And, you know, again, going through Instagram and not even looking at photographers, just looking at a place. So you see, oh, that's a cool place in that city, I could use that. But 100%, like, photographs can just pop up in front of me. You know, I'm sure you're both aware. They just, something happens that there's no way you could have predicted that was going to happen. You know, that storm arises, that person walks past there. It's just the light, everything just comes together and you just see it. So, I mean, I sort of see the world. I mean, for me, just when I'm driving, or not so much when I actually drive myself, but if I'm passenger in a car, I sort of see the world in little frames. I sort of box it out and take a picture in my mind of just scenes as I'm driving past, you know, on the motorway, the countryside, just anything. You know, I won't always take a picture of it, even with a phone or something, but it's just, there's just constant snippets of the world. So I don't know if that's like quite common with creatives or photographers, or if it's just me, but that, it does, I'd say most of my good shots just appeared, really, that I'm really happy with. They couldn't have been planned. I got in a location and possibly at the right time of day, and then just, you know, something came together for me, a bit of luck and, yeah, being ready for it.
That's great, Jordan. Thank you. Have you got any more questions, David, just before we tie up?
No, I think I think we've exhausted our questions, and we've also gone off into some interesting little tangents as well. Yeah. It's been really interesting.
I must say, Jordan, it's lovely to see your enthusiasm for the subject.
Oh, thanks very much.
And the point you made just now, you know, the advice to yourself about the work ethic, it's missing in so many young photographers that come along and just expect to be able to send an Instagram message or a web link to a picture editor, and then their career is going to happen. So
yeah,
it is a hard graft, but it's a very rewarding one.
100%. I love it still. It's I don't even mind the rejection, to be honest. I've kind of come to love
you get used to it.
Yeah, you get used to it. Or just the pain, pleasure, pain sort of theory, isn't it? The good things feel better when you know that you had some failures.
Yeah. And we wish you every success with Journey Magazine. I hope you'll keep us up to date with it. And
I will do. Thank you very much. And thanks for your support.
From you again
and
in the future.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure. And for those that missed the website earlier on, it was jrnymag.com, you said?
Yeah, jrnymag.com, journeymag.com.
There you go. Perfect.
Fantastic.
So go check it out.
Yeah, please do. And yeah, please support. I know all the writers and photographers will appreciate it.
Great.
Lovely.
Thank
well,
you,
thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure. Anytime, guys.
Brilliant.
Have a good one.
And you. Bye-bye for now.